Hi everyone, it's Kevin J, the best thing since the Amazon. And you're listening to The Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I talked to CEO of My Clinic and the chair of Royal College of GPs in Yorkshire, England, Dr. Abdullah Abayeti. We'll be talking about all things regarding telemedicine. Dr. Abayeti, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi, Kevin. Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for your time. I know you're really busy, so, you know, always appreciate the time you can give, you know?
Not a problem. No, if there's any chance to talk to people about this subject or educate people about this, I'm always happy to volunteer.
Brilliant. We might bring you back on again. Look, Dr. Abayeti, talk to us. Tell us a bit about your background and how you got to where you are, and then we'll kind of spring into a bit more about the subject matter, if that's okay.
Sure. So I'm a medical doctor by background. So I trained at Imperial College London, and then I continued with my training originally to be a surgeon. So I was hoping to be an ears, nose, throat surgeon, and I was training in London. I then had a change in careers, and I moved in towards accident and emergency medicine as I wanted a different type of medicine that I wasn't getting from surgery. And then eventually I realized actually that's quite a lot of time and effort and energy going in accident emergency and late nights and weekends. So I eventually ended up as a general practitioner, and that's what I do now part-time. So I'm a general practitioner in Leeds. I'm still clinically active and seeing my patients, and I juggle this and balance this really with my other passion, which is being a health tech entrepreneur. And I've founded two companies, one called Medical Chain to do with health records, and the other one's called My Clinic, which is a telemedicine service which is used in over 78 countries around the world now.
That's fantastic. You know, it sounds really complicated. How did you get to that point? Like, how did you think of it? Or did you see something and recognize a niche? Or did you actually yourself think, actually, you know what? This is an area which is problematic. Maybe this is something that will solve it. I mean, how did you come to this point where you're at?
So I think it's not a new idea. You know, telemedicine or these kind of video consultations have actually been around a lot longer than people realize. So the first documented video consultation between a clinician and a patient actually happened in the late 1950s, which was a closed circuit television link, and it was between Nebraska Psychiatric Institute and Norfolk State Hospital for psychiatric consultations with the patients. So this is something as a medical body we've actually experimented with for five decades or so. I think what happened, especially in the UK, is we didn't really have an appetite for risk. And the idea of doing a consultation remotely over a video call was deemed too risky, whereas our US counterparts continued their development and took off from this. So I wouldn't say it's an idea I came up with. But during my journey of being a surgeon, an A&E doctor, a GP, I realized that there's lots of patients we're not being able to communicate effectively with. It's quite inconvenient to bring somebody down. They drive a long way, have to find parking, sit in a waiting room to have a 5-minute chat with me to go back. It didn't really make sense. And then when the pandemic came around, COVID, we managed to put together my team and I this system called My Clinic within 3 weeks. We built the whole system. And it was very slimmed down version of a telemedicine solution, but we built it because we thought we need to help out. What can we do to contribute to this pandemic? And we found lots of users popping up all around the world, in Nigeria, parts of Peru, not just doctors, you know, they were dietitians, speech therapists, dentists that were using our platform. So from being a bit of a kind of side project from everything else that we do, it turned into a full-blown company, and we've been running it ever since.
That's fantastic. I did hear a bit about people having phone consultations and Zoom consultations, regarding meetings with their GP, especially during the COVID pandemic. And people found it really useful and a lot more convenient. And the number of people I spoke to, they were like, you know what? Why didn't we just have more of this before?
It really raises a lot of questions, because there's lots of things we could do differently in healthcare today. You know, when you think about the way we practice medicine today in the UK, for example, it's the same way we practiced it 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Not much has changed. But in that 30, 40 year span, there's so much better technology, better communication, better transportation, better digitization. Everybody that I know has a smartphone in their pocket, which carries more memory than they've ever had on their laptop or computer at home when they were younger. So there's a lot more we could do and a lot more technology we could utilize. But the fundamentals have to change, where we have to think of different ways of engaging with patients. And I think that's the starting point. A lot of clinicians probably didn't give the patients the credits to say they would want to do this. They would understand how to do this. And, you know, a good example of that in what I see day to day is when patients come to the practice and they apologize to me for using Google for finding out what's wrong with them. And I tell them that's completely wrong. I'm really happy that they've got a vested interest in their health. I'm really happy that they've gone out of their way to Google something. It's the best search engine they have. Okay, they might not have come to the right conclusions. They might have got themselves a bit worried about a condition that, you know, they definitely don't have. But you need to really foster that and support that kind of communication and that integration between patients and clinicians, where patients do feel confident to take ownership of their own healthcare, to do these kind of video calls on the fly when they need to, and they need that kind of advice. And from a clinician's perspective, you just need to set them in the right direction. You know, all the information is available online, and, you know, how they taught us at med school to be walking encyclopedias in the past, that's just not relevant for today. There's more information on Google than there will ever be in my mind. My job really is just to filter that information and steer the patients in the right directions. And you can do that over a video call quite easily. They don't have to come in for a lot of the consultations.
I remember actually years ago going to the GP, and I'd just gone over the internet and done a lot of reading. I did actually get myself a bit more worried, much more worried than I actually needed to be. And my doctor did warn me about Google. He said, while it's fine to use Google, etc., you've got to be a bit careful in terms of reading into too much, because you obviously, it's not actually diagnosing anything. It gives you an idea what it might be, but obviously the best way is to have a diagnose, you know, have a be maybe a test or x-ray or whatever test is needed, basically, to to come up with what exactly is wrong. And I have to say, I did read far too much into Google, and it was more to a negative point. And I think It's more about balancing it, isn't it? It's taking in some of the information, having a look at, you know, looking at the outset, an overview of what, you know, if some of the possibilities are, but obviously not really too much into each of those until you've got a good understanding over what it actually is, from maybe if a test is needed, you know?
Exactly. And again, you know, we come back to the same point that the technology already exists. You know, this online encyclopedia already exists. But what we really needed, if, for example, in the example that you're citing about yourself, is a reliable source you could have gone to, such as an NHS website, where you could use something like a symptom checker. And then that would have given you some reasonable outcomes, maybe not with diagnosis, but it would have at least told you, I recommend you go to A&E. I recommend you talk to your GP within 2 or 3 days. I think you could probably go to the pharmacist and deal with this. So there's lots of ways of kind of caveating and using the technology and the algorithms. And, you know, people talk about AI and machine learning. There's loads of things we could do in that field where patients can manage themselves, or at least when they do eventually have a consultation with a doctor, they can ask those, you know, poignant questions. You know, I'm confident about this, I'm confident about that, I got this checked out there, you know, I've got access to my own record, so I knew that my chest x-ray last time was clear, so I'm no longer worried about that, but these are the 3 questions I had for you, could you help me out? And then that would be a much more productive consultation than just coming, as you say, you know, terrified, I read all these things, these are all the conclusions I came to, and it's just unbalanced and unchecked. And that's just because we're not utilizing the technology and the data which is out there already.
Absolutely. Let's go into a bit more detail. I mean, tell us, what exactly is telemedicine?
Yeah, so telemedicine, teleconsultations, video consultations, there's lots of different ways to describe it, but it's essentially, you know, doing a video call between the doctor or the health professional and the patient. So this is a system which has been around for a long time. You could do it via Zoom. You could do it via Microsoft Teams if people have done it in their own professional working at home situations. But this has a bit more of a healthcare feel to it, with the kind of secure levels that you need on these kind of channels.
Which is brilliant. Do you know what? You know what's strange to me? This has been around since kind of the 1950s. It's a shame that it didn't start to evolve from that point, and over the ages, because let's be honest, if it started in the 1950s, you would have thought by the 70s, 80s, we would have had more phone consultation. And if someone needs to come in, that's fair enough, you know, or an examination or physical, you know, all the rest of it. But surely you would have thought that at least a telephone would have been used more so. And it's only really, has it only really been, I might be getting this completely wrong, maybe the last few years, 5 years, 10 years, what would it be?
You're absolutely spot on, Gavin. So, you know, it's a missed opportunity. It's a misstep. And if anything, it's not the time in the middle of a global pandemic to try and educate a population about a technology they're not used to try to educate a workforce, which is already under massive strain to do with a global pandemic, and now telling them you need to learn how to use this technology. So we really should have been up and running with this sort of thing, you know, easily 10, 20 years ago. Lots of medical students would have benefited of having formal teaching rather than, you know, clinicians such as myself figuring it out for ourselves. And, you know, I'm in a privileged position that I've written a book about this to do with how do you do a telemedicine consultation. And I try to share that experience with other people. So any service can adopt a telemedicine aspect or line of communication with their patients, be them dentists, physiotherapists, whoever they are. It's very easy to get yourself up and running. But it's a misstep, as you say. And unfortunately, it comes down to people thinking quite traditionally and thinking, well, patients wouldn't want that. They want to see us face to face. Yes, but there's also such thing as patient choice. And there's a lot of patients that don't want to do that. There's a lot of patients a lot more convenient for you to call them when they're at home juggling three screaming children, and they'd rather just get pinged when you're ready to do the consultation than have to drag them all into the clinic and sit there in the waiting room with three screaming children.
You kind of answered my next question in a slight way, but there might be more, so I'll open the floor up. I mean, why do we use telemedicine?
Multitude of reasons. You know, if you really want to break it down, because the patient can't get to the clinic, and that could be because they're at work, because they're child caring, maybe they're a carer for an elderly relative or their parents, so they would struggle to make that appointment. Likewise, they can't get to the appointment because they are elderly, they are frail. You know, when I used to work in hospital, to bring a patient to our surgery, to our clinic, you know, you used to have transport go on a 2-hour drive to pick up all these elderly people, dump them in our waiting room. They'd wait there for an hour or two for 5-10 minutes with us. They go back on the transport for another 1 or 2 hour drive to, you know, put them all back at home. And that's just illogical, and it's total waste of carbon footprint and everything else that comes with that. Likewise, on the flip side, the clinician can't get to the appointment. So like I was telling you, you know, before this podcast, I was quite unwell. I had COVID quite badly, but I was still able to consult towards the end of that whilst I was recovering, and I was able to still be effective and help patients or do the kind of admin side of things. There's also patient choice, as I mentioned earlier. So even if you could come down, and even if somebody said, maybe we should see you, maybe you don't need to, and you can just send in some photos, discuss it, send in a video, see what people think of it. And it's a better way of communicating and sending that patient back a PDF document with some instructions, for example. Or even sometimes what I've done is on the video call, I can demonstrate to the patient the exercise or the stretch that I want them to do, or what I need them to do, so that I can understand what's the limit of their range of movement. So there's lots of benefits from using that kind of telemedicine solution.
That's brilliant. You know what? You mentioned something that's really interesting. If you're, and you've kind of worked from home in a sense, if you haven't been well, so it kind of maintains the workforce, isn't it? Because each year, my understanding is the UK loses billions because of people being off sick, unfortunately. And however, if you're not having to travel into work and you can actually work from home, that makes things so much easier. And like, let's be honest, the health service is already strained as it is. And it's brilliant that you could work, you know, even though you were not feeling 100%, but you're able to at least do some level of working still and see patients via maybe Zoom or Teams or by the phone and that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And you know, you talk about workforce, you've opened up your workforce. So if there is a clinic in Manchester that's in desperate need of a doctor, well, I'm sat here in Leeds. I can do the clinic. That's not a problem. So you've really opened up this huge opportunity to pull on different workforces, if not locally, nationally, probably in the near future, internationally, where you can have anybody really just dial in and take that clinic for you.
That's fantastic. That's another brilliant one. So it doesn't really have to be even the person's known GP. It can be anyone across the country, basically, or in the borough or whichever way, depending how the structure will work. And it sounds like something they're still going to kind of work out. But I mean, don't get me wrong, GPs, sometimes you have locum GPs. You have GPs that move around surgeries and stuff like that. So why not? Why not share the workforce? If someone's not available, go to someone else that is available. I think that'd be fantastic, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think these are the, you know, the benefits that we haven't realized yet. So, I mean, obviously there are counterpoints, you know, there are issues with doing telemedicine. So, for example, there are some consultations that do require a face-to-face. You know, sometimes when people try and show you their skin rash and they have a poor connection, you know, I'm not going to be able to deal with that. Or they have a particularly unwell child, I wouldn't feel confident just reassuring the mum or dad and say, oh, I'm sure they'll be fine. I think I probably need to put a hand on them and check myself that they'll be okay throughout the night and don't need to go to A&E, for example. So again, this comes down to a lack of training, in the sense that every clinician will have their own appetite for risk of what they're happy to bring down and see face to face and what they're happy to monitor and manage remotely. And I think if it was better introduced, wider spread, more part of our curriculum, you'll see a lot more standardization where people would say, look, this is the given, you need to bring down a sick child into the clinic regardless what it is. Likewise, a lady calling to say, I think I've got a urine infection, absolutely fine, don't need to come down for that, don't even need your urine sample. Because a lot of these consultations, when I do them remotely, is if it's not worked, either I've not got the treatment right or I've not got the diagnosis right. But as long as it's not an emergency, we'll touch base again within a week. And, you know, I'd like to think 90% plus of my consultations, they don't bounce back, because I have got the consultation right and I have got the diagnosis right. And I was able to do that just by speaking to them. And if it's not an emergency, that's fine. You know, patients, you know, if you're a decent clinician, you should be safety netting patients. You know, if you feel this bad, if you're vomiting, if there's blood, if this has happened, then go to A&E. Don't sit there for a week waiting for my follow-up call. So there's a lot of these kind of training caveats that need to come on board before people are fully comfortable with it.
Brilliant. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So Dr. Albietti, thank you for that, you know, for the last number of minutes talking about more about telemedicine and, you know, some of the reasons why we use it. I mean, what can telemedicine be used for?
So it can be used for any consultation. What I personally use it for, I like using it for any kind of dermatology, so any skin conditions, I think it's good to use for. I think it's good to use for any kind of neurological problems, so people that have got issues with their mobility, movement, because of having a stroke or something else. It's a good way to assess what they're like and what their capabilities are. Likewise, that will you know, bleed onto physiotherapists and seeing how their movement is being done. But really, the sky's the limit, because where the limitation is at the moment in terms of getting numbers off the patient, there are lots of remote devices which people are going to have. So people have blood pressure machines in their homes. People didn't used to have that before. So now I can say to the patient in the video call, what does your blood pressure machine tell you? What's your pulse there at the moment? And there's lots of other remote devices which are coming on where patients will even be able to check their heart sounds or their lung sounds, their breathing sounds, and then we'll be able to listen to that on the video call as well. So really, this is just the beginning of what could take place in a telemedicine consultation. But I would argue whatever the clinician and the patient are both comfortable with doing, then that is a good enough level or threshold to reach in order to do a video consultation.
I've got an Apple Watch. You probably know where I'm going with this. And before I bought it, I did some reading about it. and it's got like an ECG monitor thing on it and the blood pressure thing, and it emails you as well, emails you your ECG recording and all the rest of it. And it's been apparently scientifically tested. It said that you can use the recording or whatever it is, you can send it to your GP and that kind of thing. Has anyone ever used like an Apple Watch reading with you before and just told you how their blood pressure is?
Loads
or the ECG?
Loads of times, you know. So people having arrhythmias, which essentially means that their heart rhythm or rate is not exactly within the range of normal, they do get picked up on Fitbits, Apple devices, whatnot. Some of them have been deemed or qualify as medical devices, so you can trust the data. Some of them haven't. But regardless, it's brought the patient's attention that there might be something wrong. I would say probably in my anecdotal experience, I say a quarter to a half of patients that turn up and tell me, my Fitbit said this, my Apple Watch said this, you know, it did actually detect something. So we'll go on to do a formal ECG in the practice, which is something we call a 12-lead ECG, which gives us a lot better readings about what's going on in the heart. And likewise, when you start to put the data together with the story, so the patient will say, I actually have been feeling short of breath. My energy levels have been low. I felt really faint during this kind of walking up the stairs or what I was doing there. You start to realize actually there's more going on here. And without that device triggering them, they probably would have left it so long until they really were unwell. And then we were having that conversation. So there are definitely use cases for it. But likewise, it's the counterbalance. You don't want people to become hypochondriacs looking at their watch all the time. You know, for example, we talk about blood tests, and I'll have phone calls with patients that will say, but my blood test was slightly out of range. And I know as a clinician, that's neither here nor there. You know, you're absolutely fine. But there's some people that it does really drive them crazy and really upsets them. And those are the patients that you spend more time with. And sometimes the technology didn't support them, but it's because things were not done in an educational way. And I think education is really important with anything that you do with patients. Let them take ownership of their own healthcare. Let them understand what they're doing so we can work together to get them better.
Do you know, I think the newer watches, they can monitor oxygen rates or something like that. Have you heard
of
that?
Oxygen saturation. So the way it does that is through a infrared signal. So when you look at the skin, normally in the fingers, or they're using the skin, I suppose, in the kind of wrist area, they're telling how pink or the color change from one beat to another beat is. And they can estimate what the oxygenation is in the patient's blood system. Now, likewise, if a patient told me, and I've had this before, my oxygen level is 60% or something like that, but I'm looking at you, you don't look like somebody with an oxygen level of 60%. You know, you'd be heaving, really struggling to breathe. You do 50 breaths in a minute. You don't look like that. So sometimes the devices aren't accurate there, and you'd ask the patients to make sure the sensor is clean and try again.
Absolutely, absolutely. But it sounds like on the whole, some of the technology out there is actually good as an indicator for you to go and actually, you know, indicate something. You go to see obviously a professional and they'll use more technical equipment, obviously more accurate equipment to see what's going on. So it sounds like they're, you know, I mean, when I've used a blood pressure machine and compared it to my Apple Watch, and to be fair, they've been kind of similar. They haven't been too bad and too far off, you know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, let's play devil's advocate. Let's say it was bad. Let's say the readings were not accurate. You know, my argument would be, well, so what? You know, this is exactly how research and development occurs. You know, if you remember the first time you ever used a phone which had a camera on it, you know, it was so blurry, it was so pixelated, you know, the colors were not true to what you'd just taken a photo of. But compare those very early cameras on phones to the kind of cameras we have on phones today. We had to go through that journey. We had to go through those pain points. And it's the same thing with any kind of technology. So maybe it's not that accurate. Maybe it's not that reliable. Maybe it's not reproducing the results at the given time when you need it. But let's get it out there. Let 100 people use it, 1,000, 1,000,000 people use it. You collect that data, you refine it, you relaunch it again and again and again. And you see that transformations and the versions that come on after that.
Absolutely, yeah. Research and development, isn't it? Always about using the numbers, people, and kind of going forwards from there, which is, you know, brilliant. Apart from looking in terms of, you know, over video call skin, dermatology, is there anything else that telemedicine could be used for, like from your experience, have there been other health symptoms or problems you've been able to kind of that have been indicated through the Zoom call?
Yeah, it really can be a spectrum. So if I'll give you an example, you know, you'll talk to a patient normally about one thing and you'll realize it's about a completely different thing. So, for example, I'll do a video call with a patient about headache. That's what I've been told. This patient has a headache. Please, can you talk to them? They're a bit upset and worried about it. When I'm doing the video consultation, I can see where they're sat and I can see the room around them and I can see there's lots of open beer cans or, you know, there's cigarette butts in the corner and everything looks a bit disheveled. You know, you start asking, look, are you okay? Is something wrong? And what started off as a simple headache consultation, you've now realized that this patient was really on the brink of hurting themselves or committing suicide. And they've been drinking a lot, which has led them to a lot of depression. They're dehydrated. And that's why they've got a headache from the stress and dehydration. So lots of that kind of information in the background you can gather from doing a video call or from doing a consultation or psychiatric assessment that way, which is better than a telephone call. They can see your response. They can see your empathy. Likewise, I like doing video calls because they reassure me. So I might have a mother or a father call me about their child. They're really worried about them. They said that they've been up all night. They've not been sleeping. And when I can see the child in the background doing handstands, running around with their siblings, I feel, look, if they're running around like that, I feel really comfortable right now that you're doing a great job. Keep doing what you're doing. And I think they'll turn the corner soon enough. So it really depends on how you utilize it. There doesn't have to be a strict, this is what the consultation is about, so this will fit a telemedicine consultation. I think we can argue that the gold standard would always be a face-to-face consultation. Face-to-face is always going to be the best. It's always going to be the best way of doing things. But you will tell, and you know, for your listeners, you know, that are not familiar with the NHS, we are really struggling. It's not realistic to see the volume of patients that we are seeing day in, day out, weekends, bank holidays, evenings. And if we can see more patients using telemedicine solutions rather than bring them all down to clinic, great. Now, if we move away from the gold standard being face-to-face, let's not then argue that a telephone call is better than a video call. So even you and me, we're recording this podcast. This is audio only. We've both got our videos open because we know that's the etiquette online of what to do. And we've got to see each other and we've got to understand each other a bit more and a bit more familiar with each other. It should be the same etiquette with patients. Why would I, as a doctor, want to speak to my patient over the phone? I should offer them a video call. If the patient doesn't want it for one reason or another, that's absolutely fine. I'll just give you a call on your mobile phone. But if you'd prefer, I would certainly prefer to do the video call rather than just a simple telephone call.
I diagnose you as looking very healthy, by the way, from looking you over this video call. So don't worry, Dr. Albietti. Sometimes you need to talk to another person to, you know, clarify that, isn't it?
That's it.
You know what's really interesting? You brought up a really good point. Seeing the person's background environment and if it's cluttered. And you mentioned about seeing someone, maybe seeing alcohol bottles lying around. And then you kind of, and from the discussion along, coupled with the visual, you were able to see that there's some things that are not just generally right. The person's mental well-being is being affected. I find that absolutely brilliant. I never thought about that. You know, when you think about a call like with a doctor and a patient, you think, oh, no, they're just talking about that person. You know, the person's describing to them symptoms or whatever it might be. But then you have look in the background as well. That's brilliant. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm painting you a very detailed consultation. Realistically, I think, you know, the workforce is so stretched that it is quite business focused. You know, what's your problem? What do you need? Off you go. You know, any doctor out there, you know, worth their salt, they do want to go above and beyond. You know, you've come to me with this problem, but is there anything else I can help you with? And it's only really the time constraint and resource limitations that prevent us from delving deeper. You know, most people have crossed a certain threshold that now they've called the doctor, but they don't recognize there's lots of other things we can help them with. So, you know, a patient will call you about, I don't know, they've got pains in their hands and you try to assess them. And again, you could assess that over a video call, but you've noticed at the same time, they've got really bad psoriasis. And he said, did you know that your psoriasis of your skin is linked to your pains in your hands? And they'll say, no, I wasn't aware of that. And so, yeah, if we could sort out both of them in one go, that'd be brilliant. They were tolerating their skin. They weren't fussed about their skin, but they let it get so bad. It's now affecting the joints in their hands. That's when they've contacted the doctor. So, you know, trying to take in as much information, as I say, a picture paints a thousand words. You really can do that on a video consultation.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Dr. Albietti, let's talk about... We've mentioned a few things, but let's go into some more detail about the advantages, and then we'll talk about the disadvantages of telemedicine. Advantages, I know we've mentioned a few things already, and, you know, it's convenient for the person. The person might be, I mean, I work in social services. There's people I've spoken to where they're definitely not going to get to the surgery, you know, and to get them there is going to cause so much kind of undue stress as well because of their mobility level. Or where they live, they could live up in a high-rise flat as well, and they had to be carried down. And there's just so much involved with it. And if someone could just simply have a phone call or have got access to Teams or Zooms, it just makes it so much more convenient. Are there any other advantages to telemedicine at all?
Yeah, I think the advantage as well is when things are digitized. So, for example, in our system, so we have a telemedicine solution called My Clinic, which I mentioned earlier. And we have a system as well called Medical Chain where the patients have access to the medical records. When you do things digitally online, there is a record there for the patient as well. So you'll find in consultations, you know, you think as the doctor, you've spoken for 10 minutes and it's been really helpful for the patient, but you realize the patient has gone home. They've really not retained any of that information. They've really not come away understanding fully what you've told them. And by the time that their children ask them, so what did the doctor say? They'll say, oh, I'm not sure. And that's why you'll see that they'll come back this time with their children to find out what's happened. So when you do things online, such as telemedicine, you can send the patient information back with them. You can send them information, patient leaflets. You can explain to them what exercises you want them to do or what medications you want them to start and what the potential side effects of those medications are. So there's a lot more benefit from doing things digitally so that when the patient concludes the consultation with you, they go back with a lot more information as well.
I actually forgot, you can actually invite other family members into the call as well, can't you?
Yeah, you exactly. So that's a really good point. So we have that facility in our system as well. But yeah, you do essentially like a conference call. And again, your son or daughter might be in Australia and you want them to join on the call so they can understand what's going on and catch up with what's happening with their parents' health. So there's lots of different functionality there that people can utilize. And really, the sky's the limit in terms of what we could do, what systems we can integrate with, and how we can make it more beneficial, not just for patients, but also for clinicians, so that you reduce the workload that they have on them so they don't have burnout, so that they can do more for longer.
Have you done meetings where you're with the patient and it's a multidisciplinary meeting? So you've got basically yourself, you might have physio, OT, mental health, or whoever it might be. Have you done those kind of calls at all before?
Yes, many, many times we've done those kind of calls, and the patients seem to appreciate it. One of the things which is coming on now is a kind of mass consultation. So the idea is if you have 10 patients who have all recently been diagnosed with diabetes, rather than offering 10 individual appointments where you're going to go through the same information, you offer all 10 to come to this one consultation where they are anonymized from each other, but essentially you can inform all of them at the same time, you know, this is the medication you should be starting with. These are your numbers. You've each received a document which is specific to yourselves. Let's, you know, reconvene in about 4 weeks and see how you got on with your medications. So again, there's other ways of doing this kind of efficient approach towards healthcare using technology such as telemedicine.
I think that's brilliant. You can have multidisciplinary meetings as well with the patient, having to bring them into a room full of people and getting all the people to come in as well. It can be so difficult sometimes with everyone's diaries, isn't it? You know, so I think that works out really well. What are some of the disadvantages of telemedicine?
Disadvantages, I think, are reducing really year by year. One of the main ones I would say is infrastructure. So the patient might live in an area that's got a poor internet connection. They might not have a web-enabled device for them to really maximize and utilize this kind of solution. But likewise, you know, without trying to sound too heartless about the situation, you know, people that are not used to technology, are not comfortable with technology, essentially they're a dying breed. You know, I know my parents are in their 70s, never knew how to use their mobile phone, never knew how to use WhatsApp, for example. As soon as they realize they can get videos and photos of their grandchildren, now they're experts at WhatsApp, forwarding you things all the time. You know, they're always on the thing, you know, to our detriment, if anything, they use it too much. But this kind of necessity for a technology makes people learn how to do things. So even when I'm telling you it's a disadvantage, some people don't have the devices or wouldn't know how to use it, either they're not going to be the main cohort of people, and the cohort which are coming through, the next generation of elderly patients, they are tech savvy, they do know what they're doing, and they are going to get that as well. Other disadvantages, sometimes there's just simply clinical presentations where the patient needs to turn up. You know, it's not easy to do this over the phone or over a video call, and especially if they don't have the devices at home, for example, to monitor their blood pressure or tell us what their pulse is at the moment, they really should just come down, we should just check it out for them. Other disadvantages, I'd say patient choice. I would say if the patient is adamant that they want to come down and be seen by somebody, that's their right to do that. So that would be a negative for telemedicine, that it's not convinced that person. And ultimately, there will be some cost implications with it as well. So the clinic will have to change its patient's journey. And there needs to be training, not just for the clinicians, but there needs to be training for the admin staff. You know, the patient will be needing a call center or somebody to contact if they have technical difficulties. Who's going to fund that? Who's going to make sure that the video call, the audio and video is working before they start the consultation? So these are things which are active problems today. But as you can probably tell by my tone, I think they're diminishing as we go forward. Because if anything, COVID has taught us how to bypass some of these problems.
What kind of symptoms do you have to hear where you think to yourself, actually, I can't do this over Zoom or the phone or Teams? I want to bring them in straight away. Yeah. Obviously not an emergency situation, but have there been examples of that where you hear a few things and think, actually, you know what? I want to see that person directly. What kind of scenario would that be?
I think ultimately it's where I am struggling to decide whether something is sinister or whether something is innocent. So if a patient calls me and say they've got this lump or bump, if they told me they've had this lump or bump for 5 years, 8 years, I'm not worried. If they told me they've had this lump or bump for 1 day, 2 day, as long as it's really not affecting them, let's see how it plays out. But when it sits on that knife edge and they said, I've had this lump or bump for 1 month, 2 months, I think it's got bigger. I think it's got worse. I don't know. You know, if it was innocent, it should have gone away by now. And if it was sinister, well, let's see how you're better just coming down. So sometimes it's easier to be definitive with a patient, to come down, get it examined. And likewise, you know, you can't really blame patients. Sometimes they're not the best at explaining things to you. They're not the best historians. So when you find that the consultation is dragging on because they are struggling to verbalize to you what the issue is, you say, you know what? We've been on the call now for 5 minutes. I'm none the wiser. It sounds like it's nothing, but why don't you just come down I can check it out for you. So those are the kind of ones that I tend to bring down. I would say I try my best to manage everything remotely, not to say that I get it right all the time. And I wouldn't ever profess that I get things right all the time. But the main thing to do is to be a safe clinician. And I know that whatever advice I've left you with, you will be safe. And either it will get better with my advice or it won't, and we're going to be seeing each other again very soon and take things forward from there.
So it sounds like we're visuals needed, basically, you know, and you just want to doubly make sure.
Yeah, I say visuals, but really touch, you know, where you need, because, you know, when we talk about lumps and bumps, there's different feelings of different lumps and bumps. You know, if you talk about, you know, somebody telling you I've got a lump around my anus or around my rectum, could be a very simple piles or hemorrhoids. 99% of the time it is. But yes. I wouldn't want to be the doctor that tells me sounds like piles of hemorrhoids on your way. And it turns out that was the beginning of anal cancer. And really, I should have just examined them. So sometimes it's the touch and the feel that will really give you a lot of information.
Of course. So now the patient's view, what has people's views been about telemedicine? Have you heard some feedback from your patients at all?
Yeah, the feedback's been brilliant, especially from people who struggle to get down to the clinic. They've loved the accessibility. They love the way to engage. They feel they're much better connected to their general practice. And really, the dynamics have changed. You know, gone are the days where you had one doctor, they were your personal doctor. That was the name on your file, and that's the one you came in to see. As you say, you come to the clinic now, you could see any one of the doctors, including a locum who you've never met before. It's just anybody who's really capable of doing the job. I'd say when people have not liked telemedicine or moaned about it, it's not so much that they're moaning about telemedicine, it's that they're moaning about how long it's waited for them to engage with their health practice, and that the best they could do was to do a telemedicine, whereas really they wanted to be listened to face-to-face. And again, that's a sad state of affairs, that we can't offer everybody a face-to-face consultation to give them that kind of feeling, or that they've been heard, or they've had an opportunity to get everything off their chest. But this is the state of affairs, and we have to really just do the best that we can with our resources. And sometimes telemedicine is the best and most effective way of doing that.
Yeah, and absolutely. I'm sure you must have had a lot of good, as you've mentioned, feedback, and maybe other professionals. What's your colleagues' perspective of telemedicine?
Varied. So I would say it's quite generational. So you'll find that the older doctors have not bought into it. I would skeptically say because they've not invested time to learn how to do it. So likewise, if you ask anybody to do something they're not familiar with and it's strange to them, they don't want to do it. Likewise, you'll see the younger generation who are really, really want to engage with this and really, really see what the future holds for this kind of consultation. You know, what I would like to see, I'd like to see it formalized. I'd like to see that there's proper education, there's certificates, that this is part of the curriculum. You know, you shouldn't just go into this blindly. And when you think about how training is done, we learn from our predecessors, we learn from our senior colleagues. And if our senior colleagues have not bought into it and our senior colleagues are not using it, how are we meant to learn from them? So this is something which I think is going to be generational in terms of getting used to this practice and trying to maximize how to get the most out of it.
Yeah, no, of course. I can kind of understand if people are not used to using telemedicine and they've always been used to face-to-face, to take it on board is because their minds have been kind of geared up to, you know, seeing people one-on-one, and, you know, if they have to put their hands on the person as well to do an analysis of what's going on, they're kind of just used to that, and their minds are just kind of, they probably find it the norm. So all of a sudden you're looking at someone over a computer screen, it's like, oh, what's going on here? Yeah. And so I suppose people are just too normalized to it.
I mean, it's ironic because, you know, one of the things you said in the intro is I'm the chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners for Yorkshire faculty. So I look after the GPs in the Yorkshire area up here. And because of COVID, we couldn't do the formal exit exams for GPs who have trained to become fully fledged independent GPs. We used to go down to London Euston, examine 12 or 13 patients in different scenarios, and they'd pass or failed based on that assessment. All of that became remote. So these doctors were doing their consultations, recording them, sending the recordings down to examiners to be assessed. And based on those video recordings, the examiner would tell them whether they've passed or failed and now they're independent GPs or not. So for me, you know, there's a little bit of irony there that you're telling us that it's not good enough to do a consultation, but then it's good enough to tell a doctor they've fully qualified and they're an independent GP now.
Yeah, that's a bit of a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, but again, I think people, once they go through the proper effort that's needed to make this sort of stuff happen, then they'll feel a lot more confident with it. And it, you know, it will probably be people in my generation, or hopefully slightly older than me, that are really pushing this agenda.
Do you know what the future of telemedicine is? Are there going to be more developments?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a huge number of telemedicine solutions out there now, and really, you know, the world is your oyster to pick which one benefits you. I think patients need to be given a voice, and they need to say what they want to find from their practice or from their hospital, so that they can dictate, you know, the kind of health that they're receiving. I think a lot of people speak on behalf of patients, including myself, but really you need professional patients engaged in this conversation. People probably with chronic conditions, or people that are the main carers for somebody with a chronic condition, so they can really give their insight into how else they think we should push in this direction.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I'm sure there's much more stuff on the internet, I can imagine, about telemedicine and the future and that kind of thing. And you've got a book out, is that right?
Yeah, so it's something that we call a e-book. So essentially, if you went to myclinic.com and you went on Google and you searched for it. It's called Can You Hear Me? And it's an ebook, and I'm sure I'll try to share the link with you. And we've written here a definitive guide for before, during, and after a telemedicine video call to help you deploy and deliver a flawless service.
That's brilliant. And where can people find that? As in, is it on the, just across the internet? Did you say web? There's a link or something?
Just on the internet, and there's a link on the MyClinic website, our homepage, myclinic.com. And if you search for the ebook, you will find the link, and we'll send it to you.
Oh, that's brilliant. Excellent stuff. And if people want more information about telemedicine, again, does your website and does anywhere else that people can get information on it?
Yeah, so our website, myclinic.com, is a great source of information there. I'd also suggest that people look at the different NHS local services. So your service might be utilising something called AcuRx or another one called Attend Anywhere. And these are probably the main two you will find in the UK that people are utilising. In America, there's different ones that are available as well. One called Doxy.me and Doctors Net as well. But there's so many out there, really. I think it's about clinician choice and patient choice, and really not forgetting the people in this journey as well, which are normally the reception admin staff that get left behind, because essentially they're the ones that are going to have to troubleshoot the patients coming onto those calls.
They're crucial, absolutely, to the work that you do, you know. And is there any chance, if some people want to kind of link in with you, are you on any social media or anything? Or
yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My handle is TheAntidoteNHS. If they want to professionally link with me, then they'll find me on LinkedIn, where, you know, it's my name, Abdullah Albiati. I think I'm the only one there with that name, so it should be relatively easy to find me.
Brilliant. Look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been really useful to find out about telemedicine and, you know, its usages, etc. Yeah.
Perfect. Thanks very much for your time, Gavin. I really appreciate it.
That's all right. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.